Hey there, and welcome back to 7-Minute Books. I'm Sam, and today we're talking about In Curzon Says Who, a book that asks a simple but kind of terrifying question. Where do all those grammar rules we learned in school actually come from? Sophie, I have to say, this one made me rethink how I talk every single day.
Hey there, Sam. Oh, it's such a good one. Curzon is a linguist, and she's not here to tell you that anything goes. Instead, she wants us to understand that most of the rules we treat as sacred, like never splitting an infinitive, are actually just historical accidents or personal preferences that got elevated to commandments.
Right. And the big idea that really stuck with me is the distinction between descriptive and prescriptive grammar. Descriptive grammar is the stuff we all just know, like that the big red ball sounds natural, but the red big ball sounds like Yoda. We don't need a rule book for that.
Exactly. And prescriptive grammar is the set of rules that someone, at some point in history, decided we should follow. And here's the kicker. We often confuse the two. We treat a pet peeve like less versus fewer as if it's a fundamental law of the universe, when really it was a preference pushed by a 19th century grammarian named Robert Baker.
Yeah, I remember that part. He just decided he liked that distinction. And before him, Shakespeare and Chaucer used less with count nouns all the time. So the next time someone corrects you at the grocery store for 10 items or less, you can tell them they're enforcing a relatively recent invention.
And Curzon's point is not that we should abandon all distinctions. It's that we should recognize them for what they are, preferences, not commandments. That takes so much pressure off, honestly.
Absolutely. One of my favorite examples in the book is the split infinitive. The rule against it, you know, to boldly go, was invented by 19th century grammarians who wanted English to behave like Latin, where infinitives are one word and can't be split. But English infinitives are two words, and sometimes splitting them just sounds better.
Right.
And the same goes for ending a sentence with a preposition. That's another Latin hand-me-down that never really fit English. Winston Churchill supposedly mocked it by saying, "This is the sort of English up with which I will not put."
And I love that Curzon calls these rules shibboleths, tests of belonging. Knowing them signals you're part of the educated elite. Not knowing them marks you as an outsider. It's not really about clarity or logic.
Exactly. And that brings us to one of the most liberating parts of the book for me, the singular they. For generations, students were taught that he was the correct generic pronoun, but he was never truly gender neutral. Meanwhile, speakers had been using singular they naturally for centuries, Jane Austen, Shakespeare, and Chaucer. They all did it.
And the only reason it got stigmatized was that some 18th century grammarians decided it was incorrect because it didn't agree in number with its antecedent. But language is full of such inconsistencies. We say you are whether we're talking to one person or 100, and nobody complains that you isn't singular.
So the return of singular, they isn't a degradation of the language. It's a restoration of a perfectly good tool that we never should have abandoned, driven by the social need to refer to non-binary individuals with dignity and respect. The language is adapting beautifully.
And Curzon also tackles the myth of linguistic decay. Every generation thinks the next one is ruining the language, but that's been true for centuries. In the 18th century, people complained about the decline of English. In the 19th, they complained again. And now it's text speak and emojis.
Right.
And she points out that text speak isn't a degradation of writing. It's a new register optimized for a new medium. Isn't a sign of illiteracy. It's a pragmatic marker that signals tone in a medium that lacks vocal inflection.
And one more thing that really resonated with me, semantic change. We get upset when people use literally to mean figuratively, but Curzon shows that this is a classic case of semantic bleaching. Very originally meant truly, and now it's just an intensifier. Really originally meant in reality, and now it's used the same way. Literally is following the same path.
And the word nice used to mean foolish. Silly used to mean blessed. So if we could travel back in time, we'd be horrified by how people were misusing those words. The process is totally normal.
So what's the takeaway? For me, it's that we can learn the rules of standard English without believing in their inherent superiority. We can correct a student's grammar without shaming their dialect. We can be both fluent and thoughtful.
That's a beautiful way to put it. And honestly, if you want to go deeper, the whole library's over at 7minutebooks.com/app with over 6,000 fiction and nonfiction titles you can read or listen to in any language. It starts at $2.99 a month, $9.99 a year, or $19.99 once for lifetime access.
And Sophie, I think the heart of the book is that language isn't a fortress to be defended, but a garden to be cultivated. It grows, it changes, and it belongs to everyone who uses it.
Exactly.
Language is a living thing, and we're all part of shaping it. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the next one.